The Good Life. I'm Dean Wilson. So grateful that you're joining us. If you're watching us on television here in the Santa Barbara, California area, we welcome you at TVSB. And so many of you join us on all these other platforms, YouTube and the website, goodlifetelevision.org. And then we've seen a continued growth in the podcast, which is you search for Good Life Conversations. And you can find any of the podcast platforms. Search Good Life Conversations. You'll find us there. Those interviews, they drop every week. Same on the YouTube. And on the YouTube channel, you can see all the long-form interviews, and you can also see some of the what we call power clips, where we break them up into some of the great moments. And so we're just grateful you're with us. We're brought to you by Bunnin Chevrolet and all of our friends there. We're grateful for them. And we're talking about the good stuff, and we're talking to some great people. And there's some just, when you really, if you could turn off the cable news channels for, you know, 15 minutes or so, and you actually start talking to some real people, it's amazing the goodness. It's amazing the passion, the people that step out and make a difference, build a great business, build a great family, volunteer. It's just amazing what we've discovered here over these years, and so we're grateful that you're along for the ride with us. And I'm really grateful for my guest today. David Charlson is with me, and I'm going to give a quick background. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks.
So
thanks,
David has been successful in business, and I love talking to business people. He's had 24 years kind of in business development. He's developed products specifically in the pet industry, actually, and the products that have been wildly successful. And David is now he continues on in sales and in business, but he's also doing coaching, and which is really a fascinating thing for executives. We're going to talk about kind of what he's teaching and so forth. But it's fun. I love how, you know, I had the gentleman sit here who's kind of a mentor to me and somebody I look up to a lot, and he said, you know, he said I have more respect, admiration for people who start out in business with a product or an idea, an entrepreneur, a mm-hmm. startup. He says, maybe than anyone else. He says, because no, he says, I could never do it. Mm-hmm. He says, and he's been an executive in corporations, but mm-hmm. not in that, you know, view against the world kind of
yeah.
feeling.
Yeah, absolutely.
He says, I have so much respect for those people because it's so hard.
Amen.
Reflect on your career before we get into your coaching and
sure,
some of this stuff.
Absolutely.
Reflect a little bit kind of on your life and career as it's gone.
Yeah. Got a degree in math from Cal Poly Pomona. Thought I wanted to be a math teacher. Turned out I wasn't good at classroom management, so that I kind of got my dreams dashed there. Landed in the mortgage business. Did that for 16 years. Was very successful with that. At one point had 35 employees and was doing very well. And then in 2007, some cracks in the foundation of my marriage came about. My daughter got very sick and nearly died. And then this little thing called the 2008-2009 financial,
right.
world meltdown. Financial crisis meltdown yeah. happened. And the combination of those three really punched me in the gut. Most of my income was based on mortgage. Most of my investments were in real estate. I was responsible with that. I didn't do a lot of the junk loans. And for 2 years, I worked pro bono pretty much, helping a lot of people get out of the messes that other people had put them in.
Wow.
While my marriage was falling apart, while my daughter was nearly dying, while I was selling things off, and I'd kind of seen the bubble coming, had sold some of my properties off, but it still hit really hard. And then of course, just losing a marriage and nearly losing your daughter, sometimes your soul just gets a little worn out.
Right.
And so I was in this really kind of a hole of a place, and I was praying with a group of men early in the morning, some really dedicated prayer warriors, and I'd landed working for a walnut farmer, a large walnut farmer, Crane Walnut in Corning, and he had me working in his byproducts division. He owned about 30,000 acres of walnuts, so we had a lot of walnut shells, and I had this really strange, I was going to go into financial planning, and instead I landed in selling walnut shells. And we were praying one morning, and God just landed this idea on me. I didn't even know what it was. He just said, I'm about to turn your workplace upside down, and no man will be able to take credit for it. And I drove 15 minutes to work, and I was so captivated by what God had just said that I forgot that I was in a workplace, and my new boss, who had only been there 3 months, said, hey, how you doing this morning? I said, hey, you got a minute? And I just just very wildly said, hey, just so you know, God's about to do something in this place. It's going to turn this place upside down and no man will be able to take credit for it. And he kind of went, well, have a good morning.
Sounds good. Yeah.
Hope you get some stuff done today. You know, he had no, I mean, I was mortified. I thought, what have I done? Why would I say that? I don't even know what I mean. Like, what is God going to do? Well, 3 days later, a local shelter called us and they had had some embezzlement. And we had this product that was failing. It was a pellet for pellet stoves made of walnut shell. And they had invested about $1 million in equipment and they were trying to scale it, but it was causing some problems in certain stoves, so it wasn't doing well. And this pellet for pellet stoves, this guy running the shelter that had been brought in to fix it, was looking for any way to save money. So he bought these pellets for pellet stoves, thought it would work as a cat litter. And it turns out the tannins and walnut shells are like best at absorbing ammonia odor than any other substance. So he called, he said, you're going to want to come buy me lunch. I just developed a new product for you. Get down here.
No way.
And that was the thing that God said was about to happen. And we went from a product that was losing money. The new margins were 7 times better than any margins. We were able to obviously recoup all the cost of the equipment. And I was put in charge of launching this brand. And I was going through the darkest night of my soul. I was on the road. I was sent around the world, crying in my hotel room every night, missing my kids. And yet I watched God move through this word.
Oh.
And I just held on to it like it was my life. Because in that moment, that word was what was propelling. And it was just changing lives everywhere. The guy that I said the crazy thing to, you know, like, he took me to Vegas when we had to buy some machinery, and I know nothing about machinery. He's like, help me pick the right packaging equipment. I'm like, sure. But he knew that I had an eye for what packaging would work for consumers. So he was trying to make sure he got a machine where we could get the right packaging. So I did actually know something about it. Got in the hotel room. He goes, is this that thing you were talking about when you did that crazy? I said, yes. He goes, this is spooky. And he could feel it. That when God speaks something into existence, somebody has to steward it. Somebody has to be the person that holds on to the vision. So to your friend's point, I feel like that was the biggest lesson I learned from that moment was, yes, it's a very hard thing to start a product. Yes, it's a very hard thing to birth something. And you really do need God's help.
Yes.
Like, without it, it still could be a success, but it's much easier when God's breathed it into existence.
That is amazing.
Thank you.
What year was that, when that was birthed?
That was 2010.
Okay. Was, yeah. So you guys went for it.
Yeah. So there was a team for sure, and I was the face of the product. I was up against Nestle, Purina, kind of the small little pet company. You know, there's cat litter is a $2 billion a year industry, and these guys spend about $55 million a year, sometimes their budgets, you know, on marketing. And we were this little guy. So it was a David and Goliath kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And God gave one of my teammates, we realized that we could scientifically prove that our cat litter is better than anybody else's. And up to that point in the industry, everyone just had these subjective tests. They would have panels come in. So we had this kind of new way of measuring. So I'd go to a big jaded buyer and go, hey, I got a new cat litter. You know, and the buyer of Petco would go, sure you do, whatever. But I'd pull this little test out and they would go, oh. And so God opened the doors through that test as well. And within 18 months, it was an international brand. And then a very large pet food company bought the rights, the raw materials, and created a huge success. And then the company said, you know, hey, thank you. The company that bought them already had a sales team. So now I just had this 18-month whirlwind, and I literally felt like I'd gone through the most tumultuous time of my life, and yet God was blessing all this stuff at the same time. It was very...
Yeah.
It took... It took a while to kind of digest what had just happened.
I bet.
Right? Like,
you're probably still digesting it.
I still am. Can you tell?
Yeah. So take us back to the dark night of the soul. Take us back to, I don't want to spend a lot of time.
Oh, that's fine.
But I want to just ask you.
I'm fine with
that. Because there's a lot of people watching this that might be in that spot right now.
Yeah.
Because when the wheels come off.
Yeah.
I mean, and I found this in my own life. There's an opportunity for something to happen that couldn't otherwise happen. Somebody said to me, you know, suffering, if you allow it, will take you to places that you couldn't have otherwise gone.
Yeah.
Well, talk to us about
that. I was in so much pain I didn't know. I was looking for ways to escape it. It was so devastating. I was so disappointed, and I felt like I'd been betrayed by God, honestly, deep inside, like if I was really honest.
Right.
There was a deeper part of me that knew I hadn't been, but that part of my soul that I had to get it out.
Yeah.
And the pain was so bad that, you know, some nights I would drink too much.
Yeah.
Some nights I'd watch something inappropriate on the TV, you know, to try to escape the pain.
Right.
Then I'd feel even, of course, more horrible.
Right.
It didn't fix anything.
Right.
And the thing I did right, I think, was I make it sound like I made a choice. I was in so much pain, God would come after some shameful thing that I did that I felt ashamed of. He'd go, "Can you just let me touch your heart now?"
Yeah.
And I said yes. And there were nights where the amount of pain from my past, not just that event that got released, was so cathartic. I'd cry myself to sleep. I'd forget to set my alarm. And I was being flown by the company to go to important meetings. And I would either hear a bell or a voice would wake me up in the morning.
Really?
And I just went, "God, you're so gracious. I sinned last night. You came and healed my heart, and you're kind enough
to wake me
to
up.
Help me be on time for a meeting," even though... And he did that over and over and over again. I'd go into a meeting feeling like I have zero ability to be a good businessman today. Like, I just felt so depleted. And he says in the word that his strength is perfected in our weakness.
Right.
And I would be astounded how well these meetings went and how this boldness would come over me. And I knew that it wasn't me. Because I knew exactly how I felt when I went into those meetings. I knew. I'll never forget, I almost canceled an entire trip starting in Detroit, going all the way down to Kentucky. I was going to be training 3 sales reps with a distributor. And I had a bad flight, delays. I slept in an airport. I was stinky. I was tired. I was still depleted. And yet I wanted to serve God and I wanted to serve my family. And even though it felt like my family had been obliterated, and I almost just told the gal that was going to pick me up, like, "Hey, can we just start at noon? I just need to get to the hotel and take a nap because I was so tired." But I felt like, no. I got into the car. She was a type A. She's like, "I'm going to take you everywhere today. I bought you a sandwich. Is that okay?" I'm like, "Oh my gosh, what am I in for?" And thank God she got a flat tire. And we ended up at lunch. And I just asked, "Hey, may I pray for the meal?" Which I don't normally do in mixed company. I didn't know. I just felt thankful. And when I did, I looked up and she was just bawling. And I thought, gosh, that wasn't really that powerful of a prayer, you know?
Yeah.
And she said, "I knew it. I knew that God sent you." And I said, "What do you mean?" She said, "I have something I need to confess to you, but I have to do it outside of this restaurant." And then she began to confess that she was recently saved, that she'd had an abortion in the past, and that she had so much guilt, and she hadn't told her husband about it. She hadn't told her pastor about it.
Oh,
she's
wow.
like, "I just feel like I need to confess this to you." And that was happening everywhere I went. Like socially inappropriate confession is what I would call it. Like, why are you telling me this? Like, you just met me. And God started to show me, hey, because of how I made you and because of your past traumas, you're a very safe person.
Yeah.
And my children need a place to confess.
Yes.
And so, you know,
wow.
It says in Mark, you know, confess your sins and I will heal, and a prayer of a righteous man avails much. And that has been a life verse for me of like, my company, a coaching company, is called Authentic Coaching. And let me tell you something, being an ambassador of authenticity, I'm as good of a hider as anybody else. So it's challenging to feel like God's given me that assignment to help God's children come out of hiding. It's a challenging,
so
challenging
great.
Thing. And I'm just as bad at it as anybody else. But people say I'm good at it. I think I'm just...
That's probably why you're good at it.
Yeah.
Because you don't think you're good at it.
Yeah, maybe.
Authenticity is a big thing.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think religious systems or cultures can work against authenticity.
100%.
If I say this out loud, I'm going to be banished, in trouble, thought less of, whatever the case. But at the same time, when you read the Bible, you know the worst sins of all these heroes of the faith.
Yeah.
Why do we know that? Like, I always think about that. Why in the Bible does it talk about David's worst moment?
Right.
Or, like, I think there's a reason.
Yeah.
Like, it's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay to be not okay.
Yeah.
Know?
It is. And the funny thing is, when you admit you're not okay, then you become more okay.
Right.
So it's like, it's such a paradox. And you're, and so we, you know, to me, the most powerful force on earth is authentic human expression. Like, it's, and it, I call it art, and it's rooted in authentic identity, and it's rooted in your ability to know who God made you to be. So it's, so it starts with, God, tell me who I am, because I don't think I know. And, yeah. And we're so much more wonderful than we even can imagine, and God knows all this about us. But we're born into a world that is, in some ways, has some targeted assault against the expression of who we really are. And
right.
Right?
Right.
So the word authentic just means of undisputed origin.
Hmm.
So when you see someone in their element, it's almost like people just recognize it. You could have 20 singers and they all are wonderful, but one of them just hits that authentic right. chord and you're like, oh, it takes right. your breath away.
Right.
They're all talented.
Right.
And so we know, people will say that's of undisputed origin. Like, you know, that came from something beyond.
Ah.
Right?
That's, I never knew that. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so in the enemy doesn't want people to know who they are.
Right.
Right? It's a right. confusion. In the world, it's a confusion.
Yes.
And the, and if we, let's just, you may not believe in the devil, whatever you want to call him, there, but I've it's very clear to me there's an enemy of each of our souls, of our, yeah. who we are. And that enemy doesn't want us to know who we are, much less live our authentic
yeah.
self,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, and if you think about it, like in Australia, there's a thing called tall poppy syndrome, right? Have you heard of this?
No.
So it's basically like when someone gets too big for their britches, when they're kind of ready to kind of pop out and become, there's a cultural thing where it's like, let's knock them down to knock them down to size, so they don't get too full of themselves.
Ah.
And there's a lot of confusion around pride and arrogance versus the best. So it requires humility. I think a true authentic expression is combined with humility, and humility is my definition of it, and I heard it from someone else, so I'm going to paraphrase, but it's, you know, it's knowing how great you are, but also knowing how small that greatness is in comparison to the creation and your creator.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's a paradox, right? Like, I know I'm great, but I'm going to rise up in pride if I don't balance that against the greatness of all the people around me.
That's so true. That's good.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, that's really good. I've thought about that question. Like, how is it that we're dust, right?
Yeah.
We're dust. We're like a drop in the ocean.
Yeah.
And yet we're this marvelous, created by God in the image of God, that he was willing to die for, you know, like it's both. Yeah,
it's both.
It's both.
And a teacher asked Jesus once, like he said, good teacher. And Jesus himself said, why do you call me good? There's nothing good in me. Wait a minute.
Jesus.
You're Jesus.
Yeah.
Right. So there's a paradox there, I think, that yeah. our minds can't, I can't wrap my mind around
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
It just, you know it when you experience it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or especially his daughter, who's, you know, not cocky or arrogant, but you tell her, I say, Ella Claire, you are amazing. She says, I know. without an ounce of guile or like bad motives or cocky, like,
yeah.
But she's clear about the fact that she's great. Like, yeah. she actually, she doesn't even really need me to tell her that. Like, she
yeah.
knows it.
Yeah.
Like, that, I think that's so funny that somebody who, you know, is special needs and has this purity and you'd say, well, that's not humble.
Right.
She's not thinking about being humble. She just is.
Well, and I met your daughter and she was, she didn't seem prideful at all to me.
No.
She just seemed like a wonderful person.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's amazing how what she's taught us. But so let's talk about your coaching, because I think yeah. it's fascinating and yep. needed and huge for people.
Thank you.
So you're working with executives. Well, let's start here. You moved to a place, Redding, California. There's a church there called Bethel that
right.
some people are familiar with.
Right.
And there's a business kind of, I don't want to call it a program, but kind of a vision for what they call heaven and business, I
right.
think is the name. Somebody's never heard of heaven and business. What is heaven and business?
So heaven and business, the simplest way to describe it, in my opinion, is, you know, the Hebrew word for work and worship are the same. It's avodah. So we have these barriers that we have in our mind of like, okay, I go to church, or I have my spiritual life,
right.
and then I have my day-to-day work life. And that was never the original design. So perfect example. So to me, it's a place where you gather, and I get reminded of that all the time. Oh, that's right. I don't need to separate these two things.
Yeah.
When I'm working, I'm doing a form of worship. My work of my hands is just the same as worshiping in church. You know, so it's a place where we gather together and help each other figure that out. If that makes sense, and activate each other to bring the presence of God into everything we do, and to be a living testimony, as opposed to let's just pray more at work, or, you know, like there's something about just like the example I gave of me praying for the meal and that woman just repenting.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's the kindness of the Lord that leads to repentance. And so most of my day is out in the workforce. It seems like it'd be nice for me to figure out how to be more effective in just being a living testimony and witnessing my faith in the workplace. So we just get together and talk about, how do you do that?
How do you do that?
And how do you do it in a culturally sensitive way? And how do you do it in an honoring way? And how do you do it in a way that is kind, right?
Kindness goes a long ways.
Yeah.
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 It is a powerful thought, and it's such a refreshing reprieve from a system which, when you think about it the way you described, where there's this dichotomy and there's here, it's compartmentalized, I guess. You know, you have your, then you go on the 1 week mission trip.
Yeah.
And then you come back and then you're back to the grind. It's like, what a depressing way to live, kind of.
So when I coach people, I'm just kind of doing a reflective space, right? So it's like to help people blend those worlds. So the easiest metric to measure, in my opinion, our authentic self is eternal and lives in harmony with our Creator, right? So what if I just made a point? It's a very small shift, and anybody that's listening can do this. It's free of charge. It's very free, and it doesn't require a coach. And you can do it in small groups. So what if I made one metric? Hey, I'm going to pause my day two or three times a day and just check in with myself or with my Creator, whatever your spiritual belief is. Am I disconnected from who I really am right now? Am I running some pattern that's an old pattern that isn't very helpful to me? Or am I connected? And sometimes you can't do anything to fix it. You got 5 minutes and your next meeting's coming. You can't, there's not a whole lot you can do to fix it, but you can admit your helplessness and ask for help and just say, please help me. I've gotten off track. Help me recenter. And just that little practice, or waking up in the morning and looking in the mirror and just remembering, looking in those eyes and going, I'm great. Like I'm awesome, you know, and not in an arrogant way, but just right. So there's a lot of things you can add to that, but those are just two simple things that you can do that can literally change. It's a very valuable metric to measure, and it bears a lot of it's got a huge ROI. I mean, like,
yeah,
I've helped people go from, I mean, I helped someone win a Country Music Album of the Year award, and he was floundering, and he was very off-center. The pressures of the world had really knocked him off-center, and he just needed someone to help him. You know, I mean, you can hire a coach, you can talk to a friend, you know, but if you get real about this stuff, like you were saying earlier, like,
yeah,
it's where the magic happens. It's where the healing comes in, and it's I'm really passionate about cultures creating more of those spaces. Google did a project called the Aristotle Project, and they were trying to figure out which teams, there were these teams that were outproducing other teams, and there was just way, soft metrics, hard metrics, like, so they spent all this money trying to figure out, what is it about these teams? Is it a certain leader? Is it a certain mixture? And they discovered that a leader that can create psychological safety was the number one factor. Hmm. And then they unpacked that. But can you imagine that? Like, you don't hear that about productivity. Like, hey, we need to increase psychological safety here. I mean, I think it's becoming more of a norm, but I really think these spaces that if we can begin to hone in on it, it can really unlock some things.
That's so good. I heard people who are scared will show you their worst. People who feel safe will often show you their best.
That's so well put.
Yeah,
it's so well put.
I think it's true.
Yeah.
I want to talk about the truth of heaven. You're helping people with the truth of, you call it the truth of heaven, in exchange for limiting beliefs and fears.
Yeah.
How do you help somebody do that? And talk to us about that principle.
So I think of it as like a bucket, right? So like my life's my life's a bucket with water in it, and ideally, if the truth of heaven is flowing through, there's this water that's coming in, and there's just this water overflowing out of it, right? So I walk around, and water's just, you know, and then, but life throws us some blows, and I start getting reconnected to some old lies, or maybe lies I've never been able to get out of, just these unconscious thoughts, and all of a sudden, there's a kink in my hose, and then someone throws some dirt in there. And all of a sudden, and then someone says, "Hey, take this spoon and try to scoop out the dirt." So I start off by, if the person has a kink in their hose, which almost all of us do, to some degree, I start off with, "Hey, let's not even. Someone says I have an anger problem. I don't even care. I don't want to hear about your problems. Let's start off with the truth about who you are." And I have an exercise I lead people through that's a 360 that gets them connected to who they are eternally. In a very profound way. God is all about this. I don't have to work very hard. God, I really don't have to work hard at all. God's like, yes. And then we build from there. Hey, who are you outside of any role you play? Let's reinvigorate that. Hey, let's reinvigorate your purpose based on this encounter you had with God and who you are. Let's reinvigorate that. And then the displacement, the dirt just comes to the surface. So the limiting patterns just reveal themselves. And the dark has no substance. Cold has no substance. It's light and heat. So when you heat things up, they might have to go to counseling, they might have to get a little help, but there's so much water pressure coming through that it just naturally releases itself. And then it's helping that person feel safe so they can confess it. I always know when I'm on a call with somebody or in person session and they're like, Oh, I don't want to share this. I'm like, okay, we're getting somewhere. But it's so shameful. Like these things, they feel like they're part of us, but they're not.
Yeah.
And so it's getting them unhooked.
Yeah.
So honestly, it's as simple as leading people. The more I've done coaching, the more I'm like, I've got to get some visceral connection, these anchor points. And then we start to build an arsenal of anchors. Hey, when you get into a tough spot, these are your anchors. These are the things that God's highlighting. It might be a movie. It might be a song. It might be a poem. It might be something, a relationship with one of your kids. I mean, God has all these ways that he's trying to reveal to us, hey, this is who you are. And if you begin to prioritize those again, it's like the other stuff kind of takes care of itself to a certain degree.
Kink in the hose. That could be the title of the book. Kink in the hose.
The book I'm writing is called Unhidden. I've just started writing it, but it's called Unhidden. Yeah.
Unhidden.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God taught me through that season where I was on the road peddling cat litter. you know, a lifelong child dream being realized of selling cat litter on the road, right? Like every child dreams of this in Detroit. Yeah.
You're in a Comfort Inn in Detroit.
I'm living the dream right now. But I felt like the corner that I was painted in, and it's almost like God's doing this for all of us. It's an invitation to, would you come out of hiding? What did Adam do? He hid and blamed. Shame always wants to hide or blame.
Right.
And I do it just as good as anybody else, you know? And I hate that I do it.
We gotta bring people out of hiding.
But a lot of people have tried to come out of hiding and got blasted for it.
That's right. It has to be safe.
And it doesn't mean there aren't consequences.
Right.
But it doesn't mean that we destroy someone's identity just because they made a mistake.
Oh, my gosh. I get so... Now that I've been through what I've been through, like, I was reading an ESPN article the other day, and it's a former coach who had a... Not even a scandal, like, just some stuff happened. He got fired. His son-in-law is now the coach at another major college program.
Yeah.
And so he was on the field after the game with the gear of the school that the son-in-law is coaching, right?
Yeah.
And ESPN writes a front page thing about how terrible this is, and the disgraced former coach was seen. And so he had to make some statement to him.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know, the idea that we sit around and call other people disgraced is frightening and horrible. Like the world... Everybody thinks the church is harsh. The world is deadly. Like the world.
Yeah.
The you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But the church should be a safe place to hear a dangerous message, you know, as they say, not a dangerous place to hear a safe message.
Well said.
And I went to Alcoholics Anonymous for a period of time talking about drinking too much.
Yeah.
You talk about a wonderful, like, safe place.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the church needs to learn from groups like that, where like people stumble in the door, literally. Right.
And they know they need a savior.
They know they need help. They're out of gas. Talk about a kink in the hose.
Yeah.
You know, SOS, yeah. But it's okay. Because why? Because everybody else is the same. Like, that's a wonderful, safe place. But the problem, I think, sometimes is if there's religious people that aren't willing to admit that they don't have it all together.
Have you met anybody that does? I have not yet. I mean,
it's just a matter of time before we find out. But
so, I mean, we're all playing a little game. I forget the author, but he said when you meet a man or a woman, you usually meet an elaborate fig leaf.
Yeah, right. That's right.
I have my own elaborate fig leaf. I'm trying to dismantle it, but I'm not very good at it. God is just like, I'm going to just, you know, so unhidden is just, how do you live as a person of no reputation? Jesus was a man of no reputation.
Yeah.
He hung out with Zacchaeus.
Yeah, right.
Right?
What a guy Jesus was. Is.
I like that guy.
He's something, isn't he? He's something. The more I walk with him, learn about him, trust him, the bigger it gets to me. You know?
And the more I realize I don't know anything about him.
That's right.
Right? That's the crazy thing. He's so big. You know, like...
He gets bigger the closer you get.
I get a little piece more, so I'm like, oh, I know so much.
Oh, yeah.
No, you don't.
We don't know.
No, you don't.
We don't know much at all.
Be careful.
Yeah. Yeah, we were in Washington, D.C., driving from Dallas with my kids, and we were driving toward the Washington Monument. And the closer we got, the bigger it got. And that's what it hit me. Like, I think that's the way it is with God. We think we have him wired. When we really walk with him, especially in dark nights of the soul, valleys, failure, struggle, when we cling and we get to know it, like, he's big. And you have to believe in a big God to believe for big things.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, let me tell you something. Just, I was along for the ride on that cat litter thing that happened. I mean, I was along for the ride. Like, it was happening.
In spite of you.
In spite of me. And that's and that really brought a great deal of peace to me. Like, oh, this is, I heard Joyce Meyer say, I've got so many people, so many employees, so many things. Like, I would be a wreck if I didn't believe in God, because there's just too much that has my name on it that could all go sour in a second.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, how can you grow anything of substance without some kind of a security and knowing that there's a force bigger than you?
Yeah.
And we're talking about our Savior Jesus, but I you know, I was an atheist for 30 years, so.
Were you really?
I was, yeah. I was.
How'd that go?
Not so good. Not so good. Well, but you know what? I know that God was working in my life when I was an atheist.
Right,
so
I'm sure.
It wasn't like I was, because I didn't believe, that God left me in the lurch.
Yeah.
I see his hand on my life then. Yeah. It's just so much more comforting and still challenging, but there's just a security now so that I have great. That I didn't have.
Well, I encourage people to check it out. So last question, just real quick, maybe we're out of time, but healthy masculine vulnerability. I thought that was an interesting...
Yeah.
What is that?
Well, there's a great teacher, and I'm trying to think of her name right now. Brené Brown did a lot of talk, right? And she did a lot of vulnerability stuff with women and shame, and she got very well known by a TED Talk. And a man came up to her and said, hey, love this work. I'm here with my wife and my daughter. They would rather see me die than be vulnerable to them. They would rather see me die and die for them sacrificially on my white steed than they would to have me be vulnerable. How am I supposed to be vulnerable when I am called to be the stoic, sacrificial male? And so it's a different, when I say healthy masculine vulnerability, it unpacks differently. We have a different set of credos that we live by, and I believe men are meant to be leaders in vulnerability, and instead we've outsourced it to women.
Right.
So what I'll say about it is that it takes other men that have broken through that code and found a way to do it to lead other men through it. And so I believe a lot of men are living in silent prisons, and a lot of them secretly drink or have affairs or whatever they do to relieve the pressure, and it's not meant to be relieved that way.
Right.
So it's meant to be relieved in a way. Healthy means you've got to learn to be a good, safe place for another man and respect him and give him a space to preserve his honor and not become effeminated, you know, like.
Right.
And so a lot of men have mistakenly brought that vulnerability, overbrought that to the women in their life, and it kind of short-circuit things. So it's a very interesting journey. We're short of time. I could unpack it, but it requires a great deal of wisdom and sensitivity for a man to become vulnerable.
That's really good.
Thank you.
And a healthy masculinity, in the best sense, in the Jesus sense, is so powerful.
100%, and it changes families and wives and children feel safe and protected. I mean, it is something we desperately need right now.
Yeah.
There's other men that can figure that out.
Man, we could talk for a long time, but the people who are interested in your coaching, David Charlson Coaching, David Charlson, CHARLSON. Is there a website?
That's a website.
That is a website.
David Charlson Coaching, CHARLSON Coaching.com.
.com.
We do Friday small group that anybody can join every other Friday. I do one-on-one coaching, group coaching, and then we also do executive retreats, and all the information's there on the website.
That's fantastic. Yeah, what a journey.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
From selling cat litter in Detroit. Kink in the hose. Man, we got a lot into this half hour.
Yeah.
It's great to meet you.
Yeah, very nice to meet you too. Thank you, Dean. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.